Good everyone, it's August 6th, 4:01. We'll call the meeting of the Interior Gas Utility to order for today. And the first thing we'll do is ask Mary to call the roll.
Director Kelly. Director Wilbur.
Here.
Director Haginson.
Here.
Director Miller.
Here.
Director Dodson.
Here.
Vice Chair Shevchek.
Here.
And Chair Wolf.
Here. Quorum has been established. We'll now approve the agenda for the August 6th meeting. Any changes? If not, the chair would entertain a motion to accept as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded to have the agenda accepted as presented. And that also you'll notice is the July 2nd and the July 11th special meeting that you're approving. We go now to public comment. Anybody online who would like to comment to the Interior Gas Utility Board of Directors? Hearing none, I'll ask if there's anyone in the room that would like to speak to the Interior Gas Utility Board of Directors. Seeing none, then public comment is closed for August 6th. Let's see, and just to make sure we know, if somebody wants to talk, you just raise your hand, but then you have to push a button.
Yes, briefly push the button, okay. Then you'll turn green.
Okay, so I'm green right now and I get to talk. Okay. All right, let's go to section 2, new business. Glad to see Clay Beefy back from the slope, going to visit with us and tell us how our project is doing.
Our public commenter didn't hear that it was public.
I'm sorry.
Our public commenter didn't hear that it was public comment time. Okay. Could we rewind?
Oh, okay. So where did we leave off?
Public comment.
There's a request for you to reopen public comment.
Oh.
Yes.
And, okay. Then we will, with the will of the body, we will roll back up to public comment. Anyone in the online who would like to speak to the board of directors?
Yes.
Seeing none, then we'll go to the room and ask here. If there's anybody here in the room that would like to speak with us. You bet. Sit down, please.
Right here. I've never done this before.
Have a seat.
It's very comfortable. It's very comfortable.
Your lights on.
Okay. My name is John Garbin. I don't know where to start. I've never spoke before, but this letter that I got, I've been a customer of, well, Fairbanks Natural Gas before you guys since the beginning. I was one of the first hookups. I own apartment buildings. I hooked up, back in the late 90s or early 2000s when they first came over on the west side of town. I couldn't wait to get it, got it, loved it. I wanted my other buildings continuously going to natural gas if I could. I'm going to apologize. I don't speak very often, but I felt like I had to here today. 3 years ago when the borough did their gave money back to transfer to get natural gas. I went from oil in two other apartment buildings that I owned to natural gas, signing a paper saying I'd never go back to oil again. Now I see the prices of what's happened, and the natural gas was my last lifeline for a decent utility in this town. I had so much hope. She'd read the paper about up north for getting cheaper gas. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Now this last letter
pretty much just told me, this is my feeling and I apologize, it's just become another moneymaker. I don't know if that's the right word, but it costs this town and the people that live here unbelievable amounts of money for all the utilities. And natural gas is my last line of hope. And now that I see this happening, 2 years ago it went up, what? It was in June of 2022, it was $2.76. Next month it went up to $2.18. August of last year it went to $2.29. Now it goes up to $2.49. That's 41 cents in 2 years. That's a 20% increase. I know inflation's out there, but it's just, and the letter, I own apartment buildings, so I deal with about 100 different people every month, and have been doing this, believe it or not. I'm old. I started in 78, my first rental properties, okay, and I'm still doing it. Anyway, so I've been through all the utilities, all the years, way back when MUS had water, you know, I mean, been here a long time.
I'm sorry, hang on.
It's been 3 minutes.
Oh, that's okay. With the leave of the body, we'll let John continue. Go ahead, please.
Okay. It's just that I'm just really disappointed what I'm seeing with IGU now. Because it seems like it's going, and like I say, I've been watching this for a long time, and I've been a customer a long time. It just seems like it's getting to be like Golden Valley. I've got a friend that has solar power. He gets 6 cents back on the kilowatt hour he gets paid from Golden Valley back. We know what we're paying for a kilowatt hour for our electric. Okay, I just increased my rent. I know this is my personal problem, but I'm just one of a lot in town here. I just raised the rents on all my apartments. I hate to do it. I'm probably one of the lowest prices there are. I see some of the prices out there. I don't know how people do it. But I just raised the rates because Golden Valley, I've got a building that has one utility meter. And electric, so I'm kind of stuck there. So I pay a huge electric bill. There's 11 units in that building. I just raised the rates again, the rents again, and a week later I get this from Fairbanks Natural Gas. So, that's what I just said. When's it going to end? We all know that it's the biggest stumbling block in this town economically is the utilities. And now, and I can talk to everybody about every utility in town the same way I'm talking here, but I just had my hopes with IGU and Fairbanks Natural Gas before that. And it just seems like it's just coming to the same thing as before. Same thing as all the other utilities have become. And I don't see a change. There was one wording that you did on the news that last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, one thing that really stuck out to me is that to stabilize or bring down the prices. We've got to get places like Wainwright on board. And I'm thinking, what's that going to take? I mean, that's the federal government. Is that going to happen? And because after the minimum, the gas price is half of what it is, what we're paying now. And how far away are we from that half, from that minimum purchase where it goes to half price? Can you tell me that? Where are we there? Are we even close? I mean, is it feasible? Is it reasonable to even think we're going to get there? I won't say in my lifetime, but my kid's lifetime. That was a question.
I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
If that's a question, we'll be more than happy to answer it for you. If we understand what your question is based on, we'll be glad to answer.
Okay. Well, yeah, it just has to do with Wainwright, and you know, I mean, that's massive. That's a huge consumer, right? It would be a huge consumer.
Yes.
I mean, are we, without Wainwright, are we out of luck ever getting to that minimum? I guess I'll put it a different way. Get to that maximum where it will be cut in half after that minimum max purchase. Am I making any sense here? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to sell this much to get the price at half level to go higher, right? How close are we to this?
There's no question that Wainwright, if it comes to pass, will double their requirement will more than double what we have today for our customers. That increase in revenue will be spread across more fixed costs. Therefore, all of those on that fixed cost chain prices will come down. I can't answer the half part. I don't know. I'm sure there are models run, but again, I don't understand. Maybe somebody can help me here. I don't understand the. I think you're talking about our take or pay. So whatever someone can do to help. Wainwright is big. We're chasing it weekly. We're not going to let it go. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen. And our business plans count on it happening. And it will benefit everybody, including all of your customers. And it'll benefit it by stabilizing the price and indeed bringing prices down, or at the very least, negating a requirement for price increases. I hope you appreciate the fact that the lash-up we're having now with the North Slope is a stable relationship that is, we have a contract for 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to spread those costs over increased capacity, increased requirements. And that in itself will keep prices from, as you say, doing this. We ran into, quite not by our own choosing, our price increase of 7%+ is driven mostly by trucking this year. There's nothing we could do about that. So,
who owns the trucks?
Who owns the tractors or the tractors or the trailers?
Well, either one, both.
The tractors are owned by a contractor. That we're just entering into a new contract. The trailers are owned by Interior Gas Utility, and they're coming in now at the rate of 3 a month.
So this isn't going to start in January like the... So I saw somewhere where the trucking is going to start in January.
We're hoping. Today, the day of the meeting, you're obviously welcome to stick around. We have Mr. Beebe from Harvest, and he's going to give us an update on where we are on the LNG plant.
Bob is just curious because the rates went up because of the trucking cost in July 1, and
yes.
We're not going to be trucking until January.
Well, no, rates have gone up. It's not a one-to-one.
July 1, I just got my bill. For July.
We are still, we had to negotiate a new contract with hauling out of Point McKenzie. Those rates went up, I forget the percent, but it was double digit. So.
Okay, so the rates went up, what, from what we're bringing in from Cook Inlet now. And it's even going to go up again in January because it costs more to ship it from, get it from the North Slope down here. So it's going to go up again in January, you think?
No. The North Slope contracts are embedded in the price that you see that has been quoted, is in the letter. That's all done with. You won't see anything else coming that is based on trucking increases.
Okay.
For I'll say years, but that might be getting out a little far.
Okay, well, I guess I appreciate your time, but I just had to say something. And I've got places that have still got oil. I've been waiting, chomping at the bit for natural gas to get to these places. But I'll be honest with you right now, when I look right down the bottom of my hill at a market where I can haul fuel oil, you say it's equivalent to $3.36. I know there's environmental things to consider and all this stuff, but in today's world, finances are important. And I thought I would never see the day. I did see it back 20 years ago or so when natural gas first came into town, where oil actually was a little bit cheaper the first time they increased it. But that was back when oil was $1.08 a gallon. Okay, and that's just from memory. I remember that one time, but I never thought that I would ever again see where you can heat your home cheaper with oil than you can with natural gas. And you can today if that number 336 is correct. And I don't know where that 546 or whatever that was. I have oil also. I've never paid, the most I ever paid was 73 cents cheaper than that number that's in there for oil. I did fill up in October, and I have a $5.20 average in September. I paid $4.53 in October. I don't think I don't know where that number came from, but it almost just seemed like a, you know, you're trying to talk into it's a better deal than it is. Anyway, I'll quit now. I'll stop. So thank you for listening to me.
No, you're doing fine here. This is Jim.
John, you said that your oil is 336, so you're hauling it yourself?
Well, I haven't done that yet, but...
Okay.
So but I've got a pickup truck. I'll take a 55-gallon drum and a $100 pump that you hook up to your battery. I've got a lot of buddies in there.
Yeah, sure.
I'll tell you, I never used to see that happen before. And I know the delivery costs for the fuel companies have gone up. It used to be like 30 to 35 cents a gallon for them to bring it to your house more than you could do yourself. Now it's 90 cents. And that's why I'm seeing that a lot more people are doing this themselves. Because you have a 1,000-gallon tank, you're going to save yourself $500 for putting a couple of 55-gallon drums in the back of your pickup truck.
And based on our new rate, what is our price equivalent to in oil?
$3.36
a gallon. So you can haul it. If you do haul it, we're still on par with what you're
paying. No, you're not. That sourdough bulk plant right downtown, you can get it for $3.08 or $3.07. I live on Birch Hill. I drive by Farmers Loop Market every day. They've got it 5 cents more. It's always 5 cents more than downtown. It's $3.12, and I'm a half a mile from. I live up in the hill above that market. It's $3.12 today
as I drove by.
One of the things, you know, there's not a member on this board that didn't object to the rate increase. We did not want the rate increase, but we're also obligated to, you know, to make this a successful company and expand in Des Moines, right, in other areas, as you, you know, as you suggested. The when we do move out of Cook Inlet, we're moving away from a dying gas supply. Anchorage, you probably know, is going to start importing gas, and their gas price is going to go up. We're going to move, hopefully soon, to a stable price environment. And as we grow, we're positioned, as you already talked about, to bring the price of our gas down. We're also talking about other trucking options. You probably know that you can't hire a trucker in this town because we've got, you know, trucks coming from Tote. We've got trucks, coming from everywhere, and we just can't. We just did not get a good deal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because what also crossed my mind is, why isn't IGU buying their own trucks and hiring their own drivers?
We actually talked about it, and we have some obligations tied in with our debt that we can only get so much indebtedness, and we're just not in a financial position to do that.
It's a reasonable question to ask.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying it should be done. I'm just, I know I like to own everything I've got.
If I can head on to that,
sure.
If you bought your own trucks and you had your own trailers, and all you need is drivers, go in the market and try and find a driver.
Oh, I know.
That's the problem they all have.
That's the problem all over all the states right now, just about Fairbanks, not Alaska. It's unbelievable. Ever since COVID, it seems like the world's turned upside down.
I'm going to agree with Jim. None of us wanted this rate increase, and we pushed hard against we looked at every little option we could get to make sure it didn't happen. But at the end of the day, we had to do it. So,
I understand. I've just had to come up and say, as a customer and a longtime guy, seeing all this stuff happen, it was just disappointing, because IGU was almost like a god to me. it is what it is, and I will have to think about in the future when I will hook up natural gas again. And I thought I'd never say this, because right now I'm sitting tight. I'm just going to see what happens. And I might get together with some guys and buy ourselves a fuel truck and just take care of ourselves. I mean, we've talked that over smirking, but if I was 20 years younger, I'd be doing it in a heartbeat. But I don't want to do it anymore. I didn't think I'd ever say that I've got to think it over. And I'll just get up to leave, but I'll say one other thing. Who knows what'll happen if Trump gets back into office? We might have $2.25 oil again. You never know what's going to happen. But those prices, they fluctuate. And I did look. It's funny. When I was doing all this research, when Trump was in office, it was $2 in the low end, and never hit $3 when I was filling my fuel tanks, and I never even looked at it. But I looked my back records up, and the last 3 years have been in the $4 range, $4 up to $4.75. So if political things happen, if they change, it's going to even be more so. And when you said you were looking for 400 new hookups this year, and you only got 291, I believe, people are going to, Well, they're looking at the financial end of it for that purpose too.
A couple things to sort of add to what Jim said. We get a report every board meeting, and it speaks to the difference between oil and gas. We can track it. It's the first place I go. And we're scared to death that that's getting closer than it was before.
Yeah.
But that's not because we're trying to boil the frog here and just keep raising the rates. That's because there are market sources, market pressures. That's our. There's market pressures that are pushing on us, and we now have the advantage of the long-term advantage that we can look out with our costs and predict them and be confident in there. We didn't have that with cooking like gas. We don't have that with this menagerie that's going on with trucks right now that will settle out when the market takes hold over 5 years.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But I just want to let you know that that number you speak of is right here, every report. And we track A&S.
Was I correct?
Is it correct?
Was I correct?
Well, you're the witness. Of course you were. We thank you, John, for...
Okay,
for
thank you a lot.
Yeah, don't hesitate to come back. And I appreciate the leave of the body to let John speak to us a little bit. So.
I'm out of room. Thanks.
All right. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for having John express his opinion. Now we're back to... Mr. Beatty and the harvest update, I think. And Clay, if you would be so good. Let's see. So do I do anything with this screen or just leave it?
You just need it.
Leave it green? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that introduction. With that, we'll get into our update on the North Slope LNG project. So as you all know, we are... right in the throes of kind of all the critical bits of construction at the moment. I was up there just a couple weeks to see the plant, and you know, I think when did you come up? You came up, was it last fall, August, something like that.
Yeah,
I think if I remember right, there were some holes in the ground and a few pilings around. You know, here's a photo from a few weeks ago on my title slide here. You can see, you know, buildings are up, pipe racks are in, the pipeline over to flow station 3 where the fuel gas line is connected in is all installed. Well, I've got a bunch more pictures here to go through with a little bit more detail of an update. But you know, one thing I love about this timeline slide, and we've used this one kind of over and over and over again, we are screaming to the right-hand side of this thing. You know, there's not too many projects on the slope or in Alaska that have gone from an idea to construction to reality this quickly. So, you know, you'll see we've moved along to the right-hand side here. We are in the phase of mechanical completion. All the modules and pieces of equipment are arriving. You know, on the daily right now. We'll talk a little bit more specifically about that as we get through a few more of the slides. But we are staring down the last few months until hopefully commissioning activities start up and we get towards that commencement date of January 1st, 2025. We flip to the next one. I've got a little bit more detail on what's been happening lately. So on the construction side, we've had the basically all the structural components are complete. The final facility piles and first phase of the tank impoundments, basically the berm that'll go around where the tanks will sit, are all in place. The frames have been set for the major exterior components, so that's like some of the towers, the cold box. The pipe rack structure, you saw it on that picture. I've got another picture coming up with that. That's all fully installed. They're getting ready to actually put all the pipe, coat all the pipe, put it on the rack. Some of it's already on there. And then, you know, the interior of these buildings, there are miles and miles and miles of cable, multiple switch boxes. You know, some of the complicated stuff is what's really going on as we speak. So that's all being prepped for the big cable pulls and all the electrical work. I mentioned logistics. So one big milestone we hit end of July on the 26th. We got our connection agreement with Prudhoe Bay, with the Prudhoe Bay unit, officially signed by all the partners. So the big guys, Conoco, Exxon, OCorp, all had to sign that agreement. So that got over the line. And that frees us up for getting ready for the hot tap into the fuel gas line and bringing gas into our plant. A few big ticket items have arrived on site in the last weeks, and we'll talk about some that are even going on right now. So our amine system, that's the pretreatment that takes all the impurities and CO2 out of the gas. Pretty much all the major components of that are on site, staged up. We'll see pictures of them in a minute. The cold box, which came up from Southern California, was offloaded in Valdez this week, and it's actually sitting here in Fairbanks today by complete chance, and it'll be headed up to the North Slope tomorrow. So that's been pretty exciting. We'll have a picture of that as well. And then you asked before the meeting about our LNG tanks. They're currently on barge offshore of Prudhoe Bay, getting ready for being offloaded and brought into the field. So this is a big week for our three biggest pieces of equipment coming into the facility and onto the pad. A couple things we still have out there. So obviously you get all the Legos, you got to put them together, mechanical completion. This is where the rubber meets the road. All the pieces have to fit. The construction work all has to come together to get them where they need to be, and that electrical scope tying everything together. So, you know, all the things that are in our control at this point are looking good, but this is where we're really going to learn a lot really fast. And, you know, I mentioned to you beforehand, I'll probably plan to be in person for most of these updates as we go through this phase of the project, because we're going to learn stuff every week as we line these things up. And, you know, this is the crux of the whole thing, is putting it all together. That hot tap into Prudhoe Bay, I think, will be actually early 4Q now, it looks like. And then the facility commissioning will be the end of this year after mechanical completion is done. So you had requested a detailed schedule, and I think the exact words were a critical path schedule. So I've got the next two slides here. I won't try to read everything off to you, but we'll hit some highlights. So this is the detailed project schedule. This is our Gantt chart of all the different activities. One thing I want to stress on here is, so for example, that top section, module delivery dates, right? There's a wide range on that. That includes all the different pieces and bits that go to each one of those components. So if you look at our diagram of the buildings, the power generation, that's an entire building. The pretreatment, that's an entire building. The nitrogen or liquefaction building, you know, there's a lot that goes into that bar on the Gantt chart, which is why it stretches so long on there. You'll notice as you come down the timeline here, they get smaller and smaller, more precise timing. So as all those pieces of equipment have arrived, we're really into the, if you see the faint green line from a couple weeks ago, that's where roughly where we're at. You know, obviously you can see we're into August, where we're getting ready for all the module setting, right? So this is where some of those big components we talked about will actually be put in place on the pad. Some of them have already been done. I've got some pictures of that for you. And then, you know, this bottom right-hand corner of the Gantt chart here, that's where all the tie-ins and electrical scope really come to fruition and everything comes together. So this, almost everything is critical path at this point, right? Let's see. And then the very last bit is commissioning. So some of the specific items that we've talked about, you know, the most critical path item is going to be whatever the last one to arrive is, right? And one that you're all aware of, we had a Ingersoll Rand compressor that had to go back for remachining. That's currently, it's highlighted in red on here, that's the piece of equipment that is the last one out that's critical for mechanical completion. So it's targeted to finish up in September after it's remachined and retested. And so that expected date is when it will be handed over to harvest. It still has to make its way all the way to the slope, which, as you can imagine, we kind of joked about logistics earlier, but there's a lot of things that have to happen to get all that equipment up here. So the date will probably be in October when it actually arrives on site.
Which one is that, sir?
It's the one that's highlighted red, the nitrogen recycle compressor. Mm-hmm. You can see that whole top section. Most of the dates on here have already passed. Most of that equipment is all in our possession. Most of it's actually on site already. A few smaller items and miscellaneous items out there, but you know, almost all of that stuff, the pretreatment system, cold box, they're all in our possession and are either on the pad or in route as we speak.
So, Jim?
Yep.
Did you say October that would be here?
For that last compressor, yes.
So it says here 9/13. So
right.
This is already wrong?
No, so that's the date where it's expected to be in our possession. So we take delivery of these items at the facility or fabrication yard where it's being done. So from there, we have to bring it on up. Now, I'm saying October being conservative. I don't know the exact trucking schedule for getting that compressor up here, but it'll be real close to October 1st. Let's figure delivery plus 2 weeks to actually get it up here. Do we have any other questions? I know the board specifically wanted to hear about the schedule, so if there's anything specific, I'll either answer it now or I'll take away any questions, any more detail that I can get for you guys.
Jim?
Yep.
So I'm going to stumble through this because I don't remember the exact dates, but
mm-hmm.
We kind of anticipated it getting it sometime, you know, late fall, and then
mm-hmm.
it ran around to December 31st.
Mm-hmm.
You anticipate it being passed in?
There's no specific item that I can point to right now that I can tell you will drive us past that date. Everything that's within our control looks good at this point. But like I said, we have the crux of the whole thing, putting it all together right in front of us. So we're going to learn more every week, and we'll keep getting you guys the best information we can on that. But as of right now, what's in our control looks good.
Jack?
So what's not in your control?
Well, you get all these pieces that have been fabricated in all these different locations, right? And you bring them up and you go to actually connect them. There is the risk that something was missed in engineering or in fabrication. Two things don't line up right. Cable pulls take longer than expected. You know, any number of things can happen during the construction process, putting this all together. So I can't point to a specific item for you other than it's a complex piece of kit and we've got to get it all together and get it working. So.
And when you say you don't have control over cable pull, is that because that's subcontracted out?
I suppose we have control over it, right? But it's what's the widget or thing that doesn't arrive or isn't in the right place when it needs to be. You know, I can't point to the specific item that would delay that, but it can happen.
Chip?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So Dave's probably going to kick me for this. so I'll move my leg here.
Yep.
So those things that you contracted for that Chip, you say you could
cuddle up to that thing a little bit.
those things that you contracted for that you say you don't have control over, do you have damage clauses in those contracts?
Yeah, there are damage clauses in the contracts with our suppliers. I'm not an intimate expert on all the details of that, but I can get any questions answered for you that we need to.
Well, I was wondering why you were trying, I may not phrase this right, so you know, don't take offense to it, I don't mean this offensively. You were trying to get out of our liquidated damage clause for not being able to deliver the plant to us on time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have damage clauses from your contractors, why would we want to get out of a liquidated damage clause from you?
Well, I think you know, each contract is going to pass along the risk, a risk from one party to another, right? We're trying to manage that risk as best we can along the entire chain. Now, hopefully we won't have to use any of that, right? Hopefully anything moving around for force majeure or other reasons, you know, won't need to take place, but I think that's about as much detail as I can go in on that.
I don't blame you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Steve?
Yeah, I have a question,
mm-hmm.
a positive question. Assuming everything goes good and you start your commissioning in the early November,
mm-hmm.
yeah, how many gallons of LNG do you plan on making during commissioning?
So you're probably, I mean, there's a lot of speculation that would have to go into coming up with that answer. I don't know at what rate we'll be able to actually produce during the commissioning phase, during the performance testing, all that. There will be some LNG that gets created through the plant, but I can't promise you a number. I don't know it well enough. I can.
Is there like a 30-day maximum run test or something?
I'd have to get the exact commissioning test plan from our engineering lead, but I can get you some more information on that.
And my follow-on, mm-hmm. really what I'm getting at is, what are you going to do with it? But I think we have somebody maybe interested in that.
Mm-hmm. well, to the extent we make more LNG, you know, we've got our tanks, we've got access to y'all's trailers. If there's excess LNG produced, we will want to sell it. So, or I guess you guys will want to sell it. It'll be your LNG.
We would probably want to access.
We want to liquefy it, but you obviously have access to it.
Thanks.
Yep, no problem.
Okay. Other questions? So, on page 9, what is a solar turbine?
Solar is the company that builds these turbines. They're out, their main plant is in Southern California down in San Diego. And actually, I've got a picture of the turbine coming up here in a minute.
It's just that North Slope and solar don't usually...
It's not that kind of solar. It's not... I assure you, it's actually quite the opposite of that kind of solar. can you go back one to the diagram? So this is one that I wanted to share with you guys. So this is an updated rendering with the latest and greatest. There's a schematic that I've showed in the past here, but this is the latest and greatest view. So the perspective of this diagram, you're basically standing at the connection point into the Prudhoe Bay fuel gas system, looking southwest towards our plant. So you can see the pipeline that ties in and sends the excess materials back to Prudhoe Bay at the bottom there. That first building on the left, power gen, that's where our micro turbines will be sitting. On the right-hand side is the pre-treatment building with the two towers next to it. So that's where all the impurities, CO2, H2S, etc. will be removed from the gas so that it's pure enough to liquefy. And then that third building, the liquefaction building, you can see the tall red tower next to it. That's the cold box. That's where the magic happens, and that gas is cooled down to the negative 261 to make LNG. And then our two tanks are just beyond that in the truck loading area. The trucks will come in and out that far side of the pad. So this is the latest and greatest, and it's, if you remember that first picture I showed on the intro slide there, it's starting to look an awful lot like that as we speak. Hopefully I'll be up there next week to get some more updated photos for this group as well. Yep.
So this is a question for Elena. What kind of notice do we have to give our trucking contractor to be ready to take on gas?
We don't have a contractual obligation to give any kind of specific notice.
So if we tell them 1 week that they need to be there next week, that's...
Contractually, that's okay. Now, relationship-wise, we're not going to do that.
Okay.
But the contract doesn't obligate us to any kind of specific notice.
So what kind of a notice are we expecting from Verizon to tell us, okay, we are going to be ready on this date?
They contractually, you mean Harvest, right?
Harvest, right.
Yeah, contractually, they're obligated to give us 180-day notice, which they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe that there is a month-to-month update.
Yeah, so we have to do monthly updates for the agreement, which is actually what this is here. But operationally, we'll be in a lot more contact than that, especially as we get closer. But what we're obligated to do in the agreement is these monthly updates.
Clay and I talk practically every week. I'm going to Anchorage to meet with their operational team next week.
So what kind of notice do you want to give to our trucking contractors?
As much notice as possible, which is why I already told them January 1st, and I will, whatever notices I receive from Clay, I will then pass on to the trucking contractors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it doesn't quite get to where I'm at. I mean, we're going to, during commissioning process, we're not going to know from day to day, you know, if something happens during the commissioning process, all commissioning happens in December.
Sure.
And so something could happen even in December, you know, where we keep telling them, okay, it's going to be the first of January. I'm not even talking about us, but our trucking contract, first of January, and we get to the last week in December, and something's gone wrong with commissioning, and gas isn't going to be available. What's going to happen?
They're going to continue trucking from Titan.
Okay.
We will tell them as much information as we have. Do you have a suggestion for what the right answer is?
Well, I'm just concerned, basically, that we're going to have gas available, and they're not going to be able to react quickly enough to do it. That's all. That's just my concern.
That's a fair concern, and we'll work with the two parties together to try to...
So we're bringing them up to see the site and get the lay of the land in September, but we'll be engaging with them a lot through the commissioning process. You know, as you alluded to, there will be some LNG made during the performance testing, during the commissioning process, all that. We've got a day worth of plant capacity storage on site, right? Our two tanks are 150,000 gallons total. So we'll need to bring trucks in during that phase. Now, I can't tell you know, exactly how much and when, but we'll be engaged with them and ready to handle that. All right.
And you said the cold box is in Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
sitting on a low boy or a rail car?
I've got a picture of it. I'm not a expert on what the difference between a low boy and a very long trailer is, but that's what it's on.
One's lower than the other.
Okay. Well, I'll let you tell me which one it is. We've got a picture of it leaving Valdez here at the end. Yeah, let's go through it. None of these progress photos are not in any particular order, so we can jump as needed and then just do control and scroll out. Yeah, and it'll zoom out. The photo came through funny, but that's the cold box behind the tractor there, headed out of Valdez. So that was, let's say, Tuesday. That was yesterday morning.
What's that way?
Oh man, I should have.
That's all right.
Yeah, I don't have the weight, but I can pass it along to Elena. It's a fun stat.
And we're going to visit up there. We're going to visit up there somewhat soon. What's the date of that plan?
In September. September.
September 18th.
Okay. And
September 18th. We'll have.
Is the jury still out on who's going to go, or did we?
Steven.
Okay.
Director Hagen.
Okay. So Steve's going to join you up there.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's
what else for harvest and clay?
We want to. Do you mind if we run through the photos real quick?
And oh, no,
if there's
all.
Any other questions.
No.
So these are from not last Wednesday, but the Wednesday prior. I went up on site. I'll be there next week to get some more photos. But as far as the gas pretreatment, those towers that I showed in the diagram. These are them laid out and staged along with the mole sieves and other amine system components that will go in that building. So you can see them all staged on site. Next one here. So this is the big hole in the side of the building where the cold box tower will stand. So that tower that you saw in the back of the truck will be installed on those four pilings right there. And connect into the facility there.
Standing up, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it'll be standing up. And then here's the solar turbine. It's got it's got the big tarp on it, and you can actually see here it's sitting on cribbing. I haven't heard if they actually set it onto the foundation yet, but it will be set here shortly. So that's the big turbine that spins the liquefaction system. And here we've got the pipe rack, so all of that's built in. Those were some of the last pilings to go in. I think the very last ones were for the truck loading that will be kind of just behind you as you're looking at this. You can see all the piping gets insulated and coated and everything. And then this is the interior of the power building, which will have the micro turbines that generate all our electricity. I believe there'll be three microturbines in there, and then that back area with the studs framed in will be office space, a little break room, place for the operators to be. That's the latest and greatest. I'm really looking forward to getting Elena and yourself up there to go see the site. It's pretty impressive how far it's come. So.
Already.
Yeah, the cold box and everything will be there. The tanks should be there on site as well while we're there. So, as Elena mentioned, we're keeping in contact on a weekly basis, so we'll do our best to keep you all updated as everything moves along. I'm sure we're going to learn stuff over the next couple months as it all gets put together, but you guys will be the first to know. So.
Thank you, Clay. Other questions or comments? All we got to do is sell some gas.
That's right.
Yep. All right. Thank you for
thank you.
Joining us. You're welcome to stay if you like. Let's take care of that.
Let's see. Jack,
see you next month. See you next month.
I dropped my agenda, so I have no idea where we're at. Oh, Okay, we are now going to go to Sally Estuva, and she's joining us at the table. And this will be broken into two parts, since she's going to have a public presentation on what we asked her to do regarding salary structure, comparisons, etc. And she'll give us that report. And then at the end of our meeting, right after this, we're going to go, okay? Yeah. So when Sally is done with her public presentation, then we'll entertain a motion and we'll go into executive session to do the executive session work. And that should take care of that. So let's see. Sally, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
And we're ready for your report, if you would, please.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Good evening. So I am here tonight to provide an update on the salary review and the health premium allocation project. The project scope is broken down into three areas, which is listed on the screen here. The first one was the salary data review with possible market adjustments recommended. The second one was to evaluate turnover and consider options for reducing that turnover rate and increasing employee retention. And some of the options that were identified early on were a possible hiring bonus, which some organizations have been using, and retention bonuses. The third section was to evaluate the health benefit allocation between the employer and the employees. And that would be to include consideration of the stipend amount, application of the stipend, and adjustment to allocation percentages. And so I started work on this project in March of 2024 and concluded the work on May 29th of 2024. And I delivered the recommendations early on for items 2 and 3, and those were delivered on April the 1st in advance of the budget. And the recommendation for item 1, which was the salary analysis, was delivered on May 29th of 2024, and that's the part that we'll be discussing in executive session this evening. So page 2 of your packet includes kind of, I just did a summary of what my recommendations were and what their statuses are. So that last column there is the status. As we go through the recommendations, at the end of each one, I'll ask if you have questions, but if you want to interrupt and ask questions as we go along, that's great. And so the first one is item 2A, which was to implement a hiring bonus. And I did not recommend that after talking with some organizations that have implemented them. And they couldn't quantify whether the bonus really made a difference in the retention or not. And they also expressed some concerns that it created some internal conflict between the existing employees that were hired without a recruitment bonus. And so there was some conflict with employees, and so I recommended that we not adopt a hiring bonus at this time, and that was not implemented, so the recommendation was good. So does anybody have questions on the hiring bonus part?
Questions or comments on 2A? Thank you, Sally.
Okay. And next was 2B, which was a retention bonus. And the recommendation was for implementing a retention bonus based upon turnover rates and vacancy factors for specific positions. and the finance department did provide some turnover rate data to me, which was for 2021 and 2022, and the turnover rate for those 2 years was about 22%. However, in 2023, that increased to 58%, and so that's part of the, I think, reason that I got engaged in this process, and a pretty significant jump from the prior 2 years. So while we didn't really dig into the reasons that employee left the organization, when you look at it, it's typical that employees will leave their jobs for other reasons that aren't really related to employment. But looking at those factors, high turnover is indicative of pay, benefit, and management practices and work-life balance. And so people will leave because they transfer out, they have to go somewhere else to help a family member, their spouse takes another position. There's a lot of reasons why people leave employment that isn't really related to the employee. So Gallup estimated that the cost of turnover is between a half and two times the salary of the employee that's being replaced. So if you have a $60,000 employee, it could cost you upwards of $100,000 or more to replace them. And so retention of those qualified employees and trained staff would reduce that additional cost of that employee turnover. So with that, I drafted a retention policy that was developed, and it's based on an as-needed basis as identified by the general manager. It's position-specific, and so that again is based upon, because the organization changes over time, and sometimes you may have an issue recruiting a certain job family of employees, and then the next year it could be somebody different. And so again, it's based on high turnover and other circumstances. The policy, the purpose of it was to reduce turnover and to maintain stability and the reliability in the workforce. So implementation, again, is at the discretion of the general manager. Only the regular, so the benefited employees were eligible for the program, so none of the casual or temporary staff. And the retention period was through December 31st of the following year. So notice would be given to an employee and they can accept to be into the program, and if then they stay throughout that year, then a bonus would be paid to them in January of the following year. And if they terminate before December 31st, there is no proration of the retention bonus, and so they would just not be eligible for it. The preliminary estimated cost for this policy was estimated at about $16,000, and that included the employer payroll deductions because it's a taxable benefit. And that amount, of course, will fluctuate based upon requested participation and of course, the needs of the organization in any given year. So that was 2B, the retention bonus. Any questions?
Sally, did you say $16,000 or $60,000?
16, 1-6.
1-6, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Check.
So I want to go to back to the 58% turnover rate. Could you define that? What meant by turnover?
Yes, and I worked with the finance department to make sure that we were consistent in the review. So that's a person who left a position, and the position was then refilled.
Well, what two numbers, not specifically the numbers themselves, but what two numbers were used to determine the turnover rate?
Employment, I guess. I'm not
Total number of employees that have been hired as full-time employees of IGU versus the number of employees that left their employment during the year.
Yeah, and
Number of employees hired in a year divided by the number that were that left
no,
in the year?
No, not hired, but who were hired throughout the year versus those that left.
You mean the number that were employed in the year?
Correct.
And that was divided into the number that left?
Correct.
And retired people, is that?
The retired people are included, yes.
That's left? People that you've left, that you have terminated for cause?
Correct.
People who have left because they're moving out of state for family reasons?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't think that doing that really gives us a very good idea of what our turnover rate is. I don't feel like those three categories, and there are probably some others, should be included in the numerator. We have no control over that. Turnover rate, in my mind, the people in the numerator should be only those that we have some control over. In other words, they're leaving because they aren't getting paid enough. They're leaving because of management issues or culture issues, that sort of thing.
If you're comparing one year to the next, and there's a big change and you're using the same numerator and denominator, it does tell you something.
It does tell you something, that something's gotten, maybe, but not necessarily, because if you use the same approach that what I'm talking about between the 2 years, it may tell an entire different story, that it didn't get worse. I mean, for instance, we did have two people that retired. I don't know that we had any people retired in 22. I don't know how many people were left for cause in the previous year or in this last year and stuff like that. I don't know, but it might have told a different number. But otherwise, we're trying to determine what is it going to take to retain people. And unless we know really the reasons that they are leaving, we don't know what it's going to take to keep them.
Zach, will you come join us, please?
I was just going to speak to that we did not have anyone retire or anyone move out of state on those statistics. I prepared those statistics. They were primarily termination for causes, and or the employees just want to leave. They just desire not to work anymore.
Not to work anymore or not to work more here?
Generally, whenever people, for this last year, we do conduct exit interviews, or we offer exit interviews. A good portion declined those, and then we did have a few terminations for cause. So within that number, there was one anomaly in there, and that was the person resigned, but it was due to his health.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If we don't know why they're leaving, then we really don't know what it's going to take to keep them. That's my whole point.
Yeah, and like Zach said, they do offer people to have an exit interview. That's one of the questions that's standard on those, but some people...
But we must have some idea why they're leaving. Even if they won't say why they're leaving, we must have some idea why they're leaving. And so that's what I mean. And we can use that knowledge to come up with an actual reasons why. And that's what we ought to be dealing with, I believe. I believe that this 58% number is almost useless in our determination. Now, I'm not saying that we need to increase wages. I'm not saying that there are other things to do in them, but to the degree that we have to do it and everything else, I just don't see where, how we have determined the need or the degree of the need.
So
or at least it hasn't been expressed.
Let me take a stab at this. So this is the first time we've gone through this exercise in the history of this corporation. Would that be correct?
I can't speak to the entire history of the corporation, but at least in the last 5 years, that is correct.
Okay. So what this means, this then, if that's correct or close to correct, then what this means is the next time we do it, we take Jack's comments and we roll it in to ask the contractor to consider those. I think they're valid. It's just we weren't familiar enough with it to incorporate it.
I made essentially the same comments when this first came up months ago that I questioned the 58% issue.
Okay.
And the validity of it, and the validity of using it for the purposes of the thing. So,
okay.
I'm just reiterating now in more detail. I agree in more detail.
Sure.
I'm reiterating now the concern I had before.
Yep. So, note, Elena, you want to say something?
Yes. So we have incorporating the retention bonus specifically for operators. Much like you suggested, Director Wilbur, we do know why people are leaving, and operators were leaving for reasons that were not retirement, were wives finding another job, but it was for issues such as the schedule that they have to work, the benefits that they were not receiving, and how much health insurance was costing them, et cetera. And that's why we specifically applied the 2B recommendation to operators. So though the 58% as a general statement might not be very telling, Zach and my knowledge of the specific people who have left and their reasons that. Zach just handed me a list of all of the people who have been considered and their reasons. There were some terminated employees in here that admittedly could be excluded from a calculation.
Thank you, Zach. And Elena. Other comments on 2B? Steve?
Thanks. Good job. I have a little bit on the same tack as Jack. Not on the going into it, but on the out of it, going out of it side. So if you have like 5 people resign, I totally understand you give them some kind of bonus to try and keep people from resigning. If you had 5 retirements, would you give them who would you give the bonus to? The person you hired?
So this is so what we're talking about is a retention bonus. So it's positions where we know we've had high turnover and I think Ms. Subbett just said that she implemented it for the operator position.
I understand that. But in this whole metric here, you're talking about retirements and even layoffs. And so I'm trying to figure out how would this phrase, and I think I'm reading this correctly, you're going to give them some kind of retention bonus. So if I say I'm going to retire next year and you say, we're going to give you a retention bonus to stand out of the year, is that what you're doing? Is this only about people who are just schedule insurance kind of issue, benefit issues that would like to leave?
And so the policy is broad enough to where it is written at the discretion of the general manager, but it does say that it's on an as-needed basis and position-specific based upon the organizational change. And so I suppose if you know, some agencies have had a really hard time attracting engineers. And so if you had turnover in an engineer capacity, you may decide that you would offer it to anybody. And you wouldn't just say, well, you might be close to retirement, so you were going to get it. It would be everybody in that classification. So that you have consistency. Does that answer your question? Sort of.
I think so.
Jay?
So, Steve, I think retention bonus is meant to be proactive, not reactive. In other words, what they're saying is that ahead of time, and correct me if I'm wrong, ahead of time, if you stay here when you're hired, if you're still here in 2 years, we'll give you a $5,000 bonus.
I understand that normally, but this is they're using a looking back metric they want to fix, and they're trying to say, well, how can I fix it? But half the, like you said earlier, half of the people are leaving because they're fired, but really don't apply to this at all. And the other half are because they're going to retire, which you kind of knew was coming up. And so I'm kind of agreeing with your original statement. You should be looking just at the guys who get chose personally to leave, not the ones that we moved out the door or retired. I think there's a...
Yeah. My experience is you never... Somebody is going to leave, you never promise them more money just to stay. You're saying, okay, that's fine.
I just kind of in the details. That's how my mind works sometimes, but... You figure out how you're going to apply this thing to those different situations.
Right, and a lot of organizations will look at, like if it's a probationary period termination or something, they'll exclude it. But the standard is you know, whoever has left the organization for whatever the reason. But certainly, it could be calculated different, and Zach does have that data, so could be looked at.
Yeah. Other items, see?
One more, just a quick thought. Having all these people wait until January, is there, like, just to wait to get the bonus and then leave in January, maybe a bad time to let them say, oh, you know, in the middle of your peak season, everybody's hanging on to that same month. You may have a whole bunch of guys running out the door at the same time by accident.
You could, but I don't. The bonus is not that significant to where, you know, it will. I mean, it's enough of an incentive, but it's not hugely significant to where somebody can say, I don't have to now work in January.
That's fine. Yeah. My point is, let's say that there's five people you have in this group, and they're all kind of irritated, right? Just whatever. So maybe something that we're doing, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And they have signed this thing that says, I'm going to stay until January. And then you get this bonus. They stay until January, get the bonus, and then they say, I'm still mentally they're out of it. They're leaving before. But they just wait until January. That may be the worst timing for you to let a whole bunch of block of people decide to leave. Think about the timing of that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so that's certainly something that Elena administers that policy. She could change that if January is like not the best time of year, and maybe June is. I don't know, but
thank you,
Jim.
Didn't we implement this already?
Yeah,
we did.
Why are we debating it?
Trying to get clarification.
I don't think we're debating it. I think we're discussing it.
Okay.
Well, all right. Anything else on the 2B?
Can I have one quick thought?
Sure.
I think before you think about excluding something like terminations, for example, I can tell you from being involved in the union negotiations with the gas operators, et cetera, that I think a lot of times dissatisfaction with an employer precedes a termination, because they then, rightly or wrongly, they have a bad taste in their mouth towards their employer, they get a bad attitude, and then that leads to other things down the road. So even in the termination situation, I don't know that you can just say, hey, categorically excluded terminations from part of our turnover problem, because I think there is a connection. I've seen it here, and hear about categories of employees complaining, and then we have higher turnover and terminations in those categories. So I don't think the two are quite as exclusive as you might kind of think. I stop for that, whatever it's worth.
I agree.
Okay. Other discussion? All right, Sally, let's go to 2C, training.
Okay. So 2C is the training and education reimbursement policy. And it was provided as a recommendation for an incentive to employees to enhance their education and training and to prepare for advancement opportunities and potentials within the organization. And IGU has previously provided reimbursement for education and training, but there has been no formalized policy, which is needed for consistent application of a procedure. And so, you know, I have always felt that investing in employees and enhancing their education will have a positive impact on retention as well as internal job promotability. The policy is to encourage employees to avail themselves for training and education opportunities that are directly applicable to their IGU position and prepare them for advancement opportunities within the organization. The policy established a process for requesting reimbursement, so they have to ask for it in advance. They have to include their curriculum and other materials and an estimated cost. The approval is contingent upon budgetary funding and operational requirements, and the maximum allowed is $2,500 per year. The reimbursement will be made following the successful completion, so they have to actually pass the course. And employees who do resign within 1 year after receiving an educational reimbursement will be required to pay that back on a prorated basis. So, you know, if they, it's 1/12 within that 1 year period. The preliminary estimated cost to implement this policy was approximately $32,000 if 40% of the eligible employees participated, which is probably a high estimate, but I didn't want to give a low estimate. And it's my understanding, again, that the, this policy has been implemented, and I don't know if it's been utilized at this point or not, but it has been implemented. So does anybody have any questions about 2C?
Okay. To see? Seeing none, thank you, Sally. And no, item three.
Okay, and item three was more complicated. it was the recommendation for the health care premium allocation, and it was a two-pronged recommendation. The first one was to change the premium allocation for employee funded to 20% and employer picking up 80% of the premium in each of the two health plans that IGU provides. And the second one was to eliminate a stipend for employees who enroll in the health plan, and to only continue the stipend for the employees, regardless of whether they're in the bargaining unit or not, who opt out of the health plan. So the recruitment and retention of employees is successful when the employer provides wages and benefit packages that are competitive. The balance is to try to satisfy the employee's needs of offering benefits that are relevant to their individual situation, but also affordable to the employer. The majority of the health benefits in the public sector are paid for by the employer, and the typical breakdown is somewhere between 75% and 85% for employer and about 15 to 25% for employee. Now, some of the smaller cities and some of the employers do provide health care coverage at paying 100% of premiums, but that didn't seem realistic. The health plan under IGU are designated and broken down into several different categories depending upon who you have coverage for on the health plan. And the current act allocation prior to this recommendation was it was split 50-50. And that was the unaffordability factor for employees. There were not a lot of employees that had health coverage. And there was also a $300 stipend that was applied to everybody regardless of whether they actually purchased the health coverage, except for those in a collective bargaining agreement. So the utilization of the health plan was at about 40% of employees, and some of it was just employee only. Some of it they did cover their families or their spouses or their children. But the recent feedback from an employee satisfaction survey suggested that the plan wasn't affordable to many employees. And while some employees had other coverage and they had other options available to them, it was pretty unlikely, I felt, that 60% of them had had other options. And so a lot of them were going uninsured. And in addition, the health benefits are the top four categories of importance of employee satisfaction survey, along with wages, time off, and retirement benefits is what they heard from the employees. So in doing the analysis on this, I did recommend setting a percentage split, like I said, at 80% employer paid and 20% employee paid. And the proposed change to this allocation made the health plan more affordable to employees, which I think will have a positive impact on the workforce and should also have a positive impact on recruiting. Because there were positions where people that IGU was interested in asked about the health benefits and then they weren't interested in the position anymore. And so the other advantage of this is having more employees on the health plan spreads that cost out a little bit, and so it's not quite as unstable over the years, and you don't have adverse selection, which means only the people that really need the health plan are taking the health plan. Health coverage does promote wellness for employees, as they're more apt to seek that medical attention, you know, before it becomes a big, large, expensive issue. And then finally, reducing the employee premiums could open up some optional benefits for consideration, such as them increasing their retirement contribution or purchasing some other type of optional benefits. The preliminary estimate to implement this premium allocation was a minimum of $79,000, and that was if everybody who was currently covered under the plan stayed there, you know, covered and had elected their exact same coverage, it would have cost an extra $79,000. But given that I do believe more people are probably going to opt in, and I don't know if we've had an open enrollment yet under this new thing, but if I believe that the people are going to more plan selection is going to occur, and as a result of that, it could have been somewhere around 200 to 240,000. And that estimate includes the change for the healthcare stipend as well, which I'll talk about next. The second part of that recommendation was to limit the
And was that based on going from 40% to what percent?
So that was based upon us going from 50% coverage of the
number of people.
Oh, the 60%, yeah.
So So before it was 40 in the estimate, now it's 60.
I don't remember exactly how many people I estimated going back up. I know some of the 60% will take them. Other people do have other coverage, and so they're not gonna, you know, be double covered or triple covered likely. So the second part of the recommendation was to eliminate the $300 monthly stipend, and that was for those, and just providing it for those that opt out of the health plan, the IGU health plan. And I just felt like it provided, it made sense to provide the stipend to employees that opt out, and regardless of what category they in, whether they're union employees or non-union employees. And so it did eliminate the processing for the stipend for a bulk of employees. And again, my understanding is that the allocation methodology and the stipend recommendation have been implemented.
Questions on healthcare? Jack?
So union employees opt in or out of our health plan rather than the union's health plan?
That's correct.
Other questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Sally. I think we're going to roll into executive session. Is that anything else for the public?
No, I just appreciate you guys allowing me to work on this.
We appreciate the help. Jim?
Derek?
Derek?
Did you want to address the board before you leave, or?
No, I just wanted to check.
I've got a feeling you're not coming back.
Appreciate your work. Well, it's going to be like 10 minutes you anticipate, or 20 minutes?
You can never tell.
Derek, how high is up?
Yeah.
You're welcome to talk with us.
No, I'm good. I just wanted to tune in. I appreciate your work, and I want to get more engaged on the issues.
I'm going to guess 30 minutes. Elena? Sally?
Maybe.
I will probably go home if I can. But thank you.
Thanks, Eric. All right. Listen.
So Buffy and Joel will text you when we're back into public session.
And Mike, if you would. Give us a motion, please. All right, it's 6:06, and we are back in regular session with Gary Ash Utility on the 6th meeting. And I think we're on our agenda to the point where we're at bylaw review, and the chair would entertain a motion.
And Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the bylaws as presented.
Is there a second? Okay, then we don't do that. Okay, next.
Well, let me stop for that. We're not making any changes to the right thing we need.
I just wanted to get it on the table. Okay.
Now, that would have been nice to know as part of the package.
What package is that?
There's no changes.
This occurs about every quarter. So
with the bylaws?
We have to do it by our bylaws, I believe.
I'm not saying that we don't have to review them, but it would have been nice to say in the package, basically, that there are no changes being recommended.
Didn't I say that?
In the package itself, that's all.
I was offering up the softball.
And that's the true one, sir.
All right. Okay. There's not a damn thing to be done with the bylaws, and so I'm looking at Mike, who offered a motion to accept them as presented. and seconded by Jim. And discussion, Bob?
I only point out it looks like in 2025 there is a, you know, review on the, should IGU still exist?
And IGU does what?
There's a sunset vote every 10 years, sunset evaluation every 10 years, and so that's page 49 to 58, because I had to read them too to see if there was a change. And so I'm just pointing that out, that you're, that's a task for the upcoming year.
That is what? Is that a public vote, or what kind of vote are you talking
it's,
about?
It says there's a sunset review, and there's a way the board should make it determined by resolution about what they've done and how they've done it.
Page 49.
Page 49. So they're just all Article 11 is on your work plate this upcoming year.
Okay. That FYI, Bob, is that...
That was it.
If I could add to that, that was the fail-safe in case we didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were just sitting there doing nothing, I think at some point in the future we could request that that be taken out, because now that we have bonds, I don't think that's really valid anymore. My guess.
Yeah. But I did a review before I did that.
Yep. Yeah, I did the first one, I guess. One. I asked last year if you could put
it.
So what are we doing here? So, Bob, you're suggesting that we delete Article 11?
No, I was just pointing out that that needs to be done in the year that's coming up.
The next fiscal year? Or
this calendar
this
year?
2025.
Okay. The calendar year.
On or before November 15th, 2025.
Yep.
Okay, we'll put that on our...
Because I forgot all about it until I reread the...
Yeah.
It used to be maybe 3 years, then we changed it to 10.
Okay, so we'll add that to our job jar. Okay. All right, let's see, what else on bylaws? Thank you, Bob. All right. Is there objection to adopting the bylaws as presented? Seeing none, they are adopted as presented. And let's now go to the Finance Committee report, which there was none because it was into the fiscal year, right, Jeff?
So in the general manager report, Elena, page 51, Elena indicates that the finance committee did not recommend that the board approve the giant June financials as we're in the middle of the audit and numbers changes. I just want to clarify that we were asked not to make a recommendation. It wasn't that we didn't recommend they accept it because there was something wrong with them or because they were incomplete or anything like that. It's because we were asked not to make a recommendation. But there are, and so that's why we did not make a recommendation. There are a couple of things I would like to talk about, and that would be looking at the dashboard on pages 22 and 23. That's my thing.
things is that under on page 22, you'll note under key financial metrics that working capital balance actuals 2 million, budget was 6.7 million, and that ignores the fact that we have 15 something million in the bank. So really, in my mind, from a cash standpoint, you know, we're in very, very good shape. So that is not an issue to be concerned with. You will see, now this is, and I know this is subject to change, but still worth talking about, that for a long time, the prediction was that our actual condition at the end of the year, year to date, was going to be above budget. And actually right now, it's up below budget, but that's because of some maintenance that was going to be performed before the end of the year, and now is going to be pushed to next year. So, correct?
That's correct.
And that's all it's worth talking about.
Questions of the Finance Committee? All right, seeing none. I'm once again lost because I don't have my agenda. So. Oh, yeah, here we go. All right, General Manager's Report. Elena? Page 51.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have completed two and are in the middle of one of the PHMSA audits. The one at Titan was supposed to happen first, and then the main auditor was from Houston, and they got hit by the hurricane, and then her house didn't have power. And she asked that we reschedule, and now it's going to happen the week of August 26th. The storage site 4 audit was completed. They left 2 days early, which is always a good sign. They have complimented the sites, and their visual inspection took very little. They said that the site was in very good condition. Our procedures were where they needed to be. At the end of each of the meetings, there is a wrap-up meeting. And at those wrap-up meetings, that can issue a concern, or they can issue an unsatisfactory finding. We have received 11 concerns. And most of those are little things, such as the SOP didn't say that specific language from the code. And we have to produce a couple of records from several years ago that we were not able to produce on the spot, not because they necessarily don't exist, but because we didn't spend time doing that at the moment. And we have, generally you have about 30 days after an inspection to submit the rest of the documentation to finish the inspection, and so we'll be working on that. Then the control room, they left 3 days early, and they did not issue any findings. There are 6 documents that we have to follow up with. Rather good, outcome, though I suppose we could get into a position where a document is not fine, we can't find it, where there's something wrong with that, so I just don't want to mislead, but generally the two audits that we've already had went, in my opinion, generally well. We have our distribution audit ongoing. George and Jeremiah and Joel are working on that, and that there aren't big conclusions to make. yes, but I will ask, let you know at the next board meeting. We presented our quarterly report at the...
So remind me, what are the numbers for our storage sites?
What they're called?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have storage sites 1, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Storage site 2 was decommissioned.
So which site is storage site 4?
North Pole.
And so aren't going to review storage sites 1 and 3?
They did last year.
Okay.
They don't have any kind of a specific schedule, such as, you know, they review storage sites every 3 years, etc. Whenever they come, they can pull records from as far back as 5 years ago, or in the case of construction, in the case of documents that we are required to keep for the duration of the asset, they can put full construction records as well. So some of the documents I was saying earlier that we couldn't produce were from 2021.
Thank you.
We presented our quarterly report at the Borough Assembly. Thank you, Director Hagenson, for accompanying me there. There were some questions about the rate increase, some questions about how come borough buildings are not on natural gas. We were like, we wonder that too. Generally, rather good presentation. I don't think I think the assembly members are well versed in the workings of IGU, and I don't think anybody how to get us otherwise. I'll let Dr. Hagenson add to that if you have anything. I will pass my gold medal around. I just got back from APGA conference in Michigan, where IGU received the APGA Public Gas System Achievement Award. They give out one of these a year, and we got it for our work moving to the North Slope, and I'm pretty excited about that award. We had our Fitch upgrade. I updated the board about that in an email, but Zane will give me an F if I don't also put it in the board packet, but we received upgrade both for the bonds that ADA issued on IGU's behalf, and IGU's issuer default rating also increased. The CPAC capital budget.
For a minute, Jeff.
So any idea what decrease in interest rate that represents?
No.
It would depend on the size of the offering and the market conditions. But you know, we're looking for a couple of years out if we potentially do bonds, so projecting that far out, they didn't have an answer for us on that. I was asked. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
As the board is aware, the state capital budget included a $2.5 million allocation for our main line. The current status is that we're waiting on the state to write out the grant. There is a chance, however, as I was sharing with the Finance Committee at their last meeting, that any main lines that have been installed past July 1st might qualify for reimbursement from this grant, though I am not sure at the moment. The grant agreements have not yet been executed. If that is the case, we're going to try to offset any IGU dollars with this grant. We're investigating options regarding an application for another grant. That grant has a floor of $10 million and a ceiling of $20 million, and we are going to try to make it to make the grant application to where it lowers the cost of residents and businesses, or more likely nonprofits, because of the grant's specific niche converting to natural gas. So we're working with Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing Association, and we're working with, we're potentially going to work with National Renewable Energy Laboratory. This grant is a very interesting grant. It looks at environmental justice, but also, so, and it looks like, it looks at building efficiency and heating efficiency, but it also has to include a transportation aspect. So it's like, it has so many different things that you have to hit in order to be an award recipient that we might end up pulling more entities into this grant application in order to be successful. I left on here, I'm not going to go through, but I left on here the three grants that we have recently applied for because they have decision dates that are upcoming. So I just wanted that to stay at the top of our mind. I will update the board as more information becomes available. We briefly touched on the residential heating oil average price, and as was pointed out at the beginning of our meeting, the price that we have been reporting is the price of delivered heating fuel, which is the most the closest equivalent to natural gas. But that at the date of our last study was $3.98, which made it about 18% more expensive than natural gas.
It's been a while since it's been under four.
Right.
Probably easier than that.
Been a while since it's been under four.
And just to kind of reiterate something that was tossed around before, what percent of our gas goes to commercial customers?
Just under, just right around 90%, I think it's right at 88%.
Right. And so the comparison we were making only applies to 10% of our customers. A lot of customers get their, a lot of our customers get their fuel oil at a cheaper rate than this. That's all. I just wanted to, you know, we're hanging a lot of our hat on this statement, and it only applies to a small percentage of our customers. And I'm not saying that all commercial customers get it at a cheaper rate. I'm not saying that at all. But I think some do.
It's really the only avenue we have to test the market, isn't it?
It is, because we wouldn't have any way of knowing what discount commercial customers are getting. But what I would like to point out is that while we are selling 88% of our sales go to commercial customers, when you count the meters, that fraction changes by quite a bit.
Understood.
Good. Jim?
Well, let's see if I can remember the question that was in my mind at the time. I guess I can't, so I don't have any.
We'll come back to you.
Okay, cool.
All right, let's see, Elena.
In July, the plant produced approximately 800,000 gallons of LNG, which is on par with the budget. I have a correction to point out on page 53 at the top. The numbers there are flopped, as Zach looks like noticed. So then the LNG inventory at the end of July was approximately 2.9 million gallons, which is slightly above the budget at 2.6. So we're 300,000 gallons better than the budget. New service update. We have a December 5th report. We had 419 approved for construction applications. Today we have 432. We had in July 36 turn-ons. Most of those are customers that got installed this construction season. We still have 29 installations from last year that have not turned on, and we're following up with those. Several of those have extensions, several don't. We have made an offer to Zach Mitchell, and she's going to come on August 12th as our community relations manager, replacing Katie. She is currently employed as the communications manager at the Fairbanks International Airport. We had a booth both at the Golden Gate Street Fair and the Buchanan Valley State Fair. A lot of our staff spent weekends and evenings manning those booths. So I just wanted to mention that in appreciation of their commitment. As of 7/29, we had 145 service lines that have been installed, about 35% of the total approved. We are on schedule with that, maybe a week behind schedule, but we're catching up to that. Our crews installed about 3 miles of main lines, and UTI installed about 3 miles of main lines. We anticipate that before this construction season is over, we will install 16 miles of new main lines, which is quite a bit. A lot of that, of course, is due to the targeted airship grant that we have received. To date, we have received 6 of our new LNG trailers. Jim, our plant manager, was just talking to us this morning. We finally got them registered, and they're here now full from Cook Inlet, where they're on the way, 2 of those. And so as we are able to get these into service, we have some small trailers. Their capacity is only 8,000 gallons, so we're going to take those out of service to maximize payload. A consensus with Carlisle has not been reached, and we don't anticipate signing a contract with them. We have signed the Middle Fork contract, and they have been fulfilling all of our requirements since late May. There is a chance that we're going to have to rely on them to bring some of the cryopreserved LNG from Canada, and they are staffed and open to the idea of being able to do that. And so George and I, mostly George, is working with cryopreserved right now to try to get some schedules together. So now we have a contract with Middle Fork. As the board is aware, we were planning at the beginning to sign 2 contracts with 2 transportation providers. What I am recommending is that we issue an RFP for ad hoc services and for supplemental transportation needs. So that in case Middle Fork gets into an issue where they cannot fulfill their obligation to the contract, and we increase the number of loads as a result of, say, a contract with Fort Wainwright, we have a negotiated rate and confirmed partners in order to be able to continue service uninterrupted. I have asked Middle Fork that today.
Yeah. Yes. We're all here.
Jim? Did you address with Middle Fork the possibility of Fort Wainwright?
Yes.
And their response?
So their response was as expected, asking for timelines and how long of a heads up they would have. And my response to that was that the final environmental impact statement assumed a period of 2 years during which a new tank needs to be constructed and lights need to be installed. And to that, they said that that's sufficient time for them to gear up.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff?
So as far as finding another trucking company to supplement number four, because essentially what you're looking for, have we thought about going to those that have responded to our first RFP?
Yes.
And we don't think that they're capable or they're not interested?
Neither. We think that the original RFP had a different structure in mind. It wasn't for ad hoc services. It wasn't for supplemental services. And so the intent is that we issue an RFP for our true intent and let transportation companies, including those that have responded to the original RFP, bid on that.
So do you hope that they respond to the RFP, those companies?
Yes.
Okay, so Zane, if we change the contract considerably, do we have to go to another RFP? I mean, isn't it just like, can't we just negotiate a different contract with them since they've responded to the RFP?
I think if you're changing from somebody who we're regularly using to somebody who is just kind of a standby mode, I think that's substantial enough that we need to redo it. That's my thinking. And I think as part of it too is that, you know, well, I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
Lena?
I have asked Middle Fork, and they will be prepared to, at the September board meeting, to, if the board so wishes, present their base plan and their contingency plan to demonstrate how they will be able to fulfill 100% of IGU's requirements.
I doubt if we have any objection to that. That would be great.
At the time of this report, storage site 3 was undergoing a perlite refill. That work has since been completed. So the perlite is the insulation that sits between the outside of the tank and the inner tank that holds the LNG. There's about a foot of perlite in there. It has settled, and that's why, I don't know if you've noticed, but when you looked at our tank before, it looked like somebody had painted white on top of it. That was just the cold LNG not being fully insulated, and that's what was showing. We were able to get that work done under warranty. It's estimated as about $500,000, and we've spent maybe $30,000 for some of the issues that we took on. Titan should be done either today or tomorrow morning with their major scheduled maintenance work. That's what Director Wilbur was talking about earlier. That should have that was budgeted to have happened in the last fiscal year, and it happened this year, but everything is going as planned. The budget anticipated that for this work, we would the plant would be shut down for a week. They were shut down for 3 days, and then they produced at a lower rate for the remaining of the time, which was also anticipated. So that will not result on that 300,000 gallon gain in LNG as compared to the budget decreasing. We need a trailer maintenance facility in Fairbanks starting in January. I posted the RFP for that today. So the plan is to lease a facility for until we are able to build our own. The budget that we just passed had $500,000 allocation towards the beginning of building our own facility. So we'll be working on things such as engineering, design, and maybe the start of gravel pad, etc. For this year while we work out of our lease facility.
So have you looked around for an existing facility to buy?
We did briefly. We did so briefly. We believe that it would be most advantageous to us that the facility is next to sewer site 3, so that it doesn't have to be transported elsewhere. There was a facility, the old Peterbilt facility, that's sort of in the vicinity of that, that we just briefly considered and let go of.
Just warning that new construction is very expensive these days. And so if you can find a facility that is suitable, it's going to be a whole lot less expensive. That's all.
Yeah, Lena, you tailed off there. I didn't hear what you said. You were talking about the borough's old bus barn, and that's where I missed what you said.
I talked to you before about the borough bus barn. I didn't just say anything about it.
Oh, did you just talk about the borough?
The borough bus barn we've inquired about. It sounds like the borough has a plan for it, though that plan might fall through. But they are still working out of it. So we're still in communication with the mayor's office about that, with the potential to at least lease it. But there is no straight shot to that as of right now.
I'm sorry, I missed. You're talking about Peterbilt. Is it Peterbilt building big enough for what we need?
It was good enough, right?
It lacks some of the key features I would recommend having, such as the fold-through facilities. I believe that the door height was insufficient, so those would have to be modified to match. Although that may be the case with many facilities we may be looking at. On top of that, a lot of the electrical that was running through the facility is fairly outdated and would require some substantial upgrades. But if needed to be in a pinch, it could be retrofitted to work, but it really is not quite along the guidelines of what we were hoping for. Additionally, I believe it has a 2-bay capacity and not a 3, which would really hinder our thawing and maintenance programs kind of aligning at the same time, because there's only so much work we can do to a frozen trailer.
Okay. Jim?
And what does the borough building, how does that stand up to your needs?
I have not had an opportunity to tour the borough building to pass a judgment on that. I did do a walkthrough of the old, I believe it was the Durham school bus barn over there, because that one had potential as a facility as well. And it's in such a dilapidated condition and was missing some of the other essential features like we needed for slab heating and things of that nature to keep it intrinsically safe. So those are really the two options that I've given much consideration to. If I have an opportunity, I can reach out and see if I can get a tour of the current bus facility for the borough and see if it would meet our needs.
I think that would be a good idea to do that. I don't know what the borough is thinking on doing with it. We can.
And our enacting ordinance allows in-kind support from the borough with assembly approval.
So that would be nice. Yeah. So, yeah, if you get a chance, it'd be nice to do. Check that with somebody out.
Okay.
Okay, let's see, Helena?
So my last item here is that we've promoted George to Director of Operations earlier than previously reported, lacking two of the three high-level managers was becoming a little less doable. So George has been with us as project manager for the last couple of years. Last time when I spoke about George, I said some things that then ended up being mocking ground for him. So I'm going to stop at that. I appreciate all of George's work. He jumped right in. And he will start presenting operations reports to the board starting next month.
Here, here. George, you're a rising star.
Of course you'd remember that.
All right. Elaine, anything else?
That's it.
I have some questions. Some thanks to start with. So last week, a couple weeks ago, I got a call from Larry Pursley. I don't know if you know Larry or not, but I came to know him from writing about gas and things back in La La Land. So editorial chief of the ADN has worked in the legislature. His primary focus has been on oil and gas around the world. And so he publishes about every week, and he has a string of followers. I tell people, if you read every one of his what you call now a blog, you'd be the smartest guy in town. Just as an aside, I've kept Larry's publications since October of 2010, and so I gave him his first one, and I counted up that 1,624 publications. He's really well read, he's really well thought of, and I was pleased that he called and said, I'm going to be in Fairbanks, I'd like to see you, and I'd like to get a little brief on IGU. So we met last Friday. Larry came to town, and we came over and toured the facility here, and he agreed we have room for growth. But he liked what he saw, and then Elena was kind enough to take us out to the big tank, and we toured the control room, and just had a general sense of what that is. Elena had some time with him to talk shop, and. At the end of the thing, when he got back in the car, he said, where'd you find her? I said, well, she was just, she kind of grew up with us. And I said, he said, well, she's a sharp lady. And I said, yeah, we think so too. So I want to say thank you for your hospitality and your knowledge. And this is a guy we want on our side. And if you don't get his report, let me know and I'll forward you forward to one of them that you can get on his blog. Page 53. So the 16 miles of main line, what general area of this service area are we in?
Most of it is TAG funded, targeted airstrip grant funded, and it is in the area of North Pole, north of Hearst Road, around that Dawson and Hearst air quality monitor that's reporting severe under compliance for air quality. There is a lot of infill. There's some work on Dale Road. But the major portions are there. The rest of it is little main lines to get to a couple of customers here and there. Is there something I'm missing?
Just the major delineation, at least for the in-house crews. They did just under 2 miles. That was in the Fairbanks area. And then a mile of the TAG installs within the North Pole. Some of the more notable work was done on that 4th Avenue project, which was a nightmare, the large contributing factor to our setback in construction. But glad to have that behind us. But that's the big breakdown for that, and all of the contractor work has been done to work for.
So what George is talking about is every time we have to go to downtown, there to the core downtown, there are a lot of other utilities. There are the utility doors. Things aren't always marked. Records aren't always accurate. So there's a lot of digging blind, shoveling so that you don't damage other utilities. Trying to work to find even our own mains. There's a lot of work there. And so there was a project where we did some work on 4th Avenue that ended up taking a lot longer than anticipated, which is what's putting us slightly behind on service line work. But we'll still install everybody.
All right, thank you. Thanks, George. Jack.
So the targeted airshed grant is $4 million and some?
Yes. Yep.
And all that is being spent at North Pole?
No.
Oh.
Most of it is being spent in North Pole. There are some rather strict criteria about environmental justice areas, but some Fairbanks areas qualify as well.
Okay. And what is the total budget for mainline extensions? And service lines or whatever?
The internal budget is $1.5 million. Oh, and service lines?
Uh-huh. Well, what is it? Does the targeted airshare grant include main line and service lines?
No.
Just main lines.
So what
is the total budget for main lines and service lines?
The IGU budget only, excluding the targeted airshed grant, we have $1.5 million for main lines. And what?
You're looking at me, and I've looked at so many numbers with auditors that
sorry.
It would be a guesstimation.
It's about a total of $4 million, right?
The last I reviewed was about 4.4, I believe.
Yeah.
That was set out for in-house construction.
Yeah.
And then of the $4 million from the TAG funding, $3.3 million of that was, I believe, made available to contractors permitting materials, things of that extent, while the remaining $650,000, I believe, was allotted for, what are we classing this?
Indirect reimbursable overhead costs.
So our total budget for main lines and service lines is almost $9 million?
Except for the fact that we will not expense all of the targeted airshed grant funds this year.
Oh, we don't have to, huh?
We don't have to. We have 5 years.
I see.
We're going to put as much pipe in the ground as we can while preserving funding to do reporting on this grant for the next 5 years and taking the indirect allocation that's allowable.
Okay, so there's lots of room to absorb the $2.5 million from the state of Alaska this year.
The state of Alaska, though, again, the grant has not been written, but there most likely it will only apply towards mainline. And so if we leave the targeted airship grant to pay for itself, the maximum it could possibly apply to is the $1.5 million that we have budgeted for IGU dollars. Some of the $1.5 million was installed before July 1st, and there's still a question on whether or not anything between July 1st and the date the grant has been executed is reimbursable.
And we
but we have 3 years to spend that.
3 years to spend that too. Okay.
So if you can't backfill this year's expenses, it will lower the capital budget next year.
I don't think
it should affect the budget this year too, because we weren't counting on any of the state of Alaska money this year. That's where the budget goes.
Right. But the issue of sometimes the state gets really stinky and says only expenditures that occurred after the date of signature are reimbursable
right.
under this award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think for a moment we should let slide the comment about Fitch upgrading our bond rating. That's big news. That's a big deal. It certainly indicates progress, and BBB- was as low as you can go and still be investment grade. So we've improved on that, and so Elena and you and your team, we want to make sure they know that did not go unnoticed nor underappreciated. That's a big deal. So, all right, let's see. Elena, anything else?
Yes.
Let's see. Okay. Attorney's report. Zane?
Here, it's on page 55. I don't have anything to add, but I'm happy to answer any questions the board has.
Questions of our attorney? Seeing none, let's go to directors. Let's start with Jim. Any comments for the good of the order?
No. Well, since we were talking about that issue of comparing the cost of diesel fuel or heating fuel to our price of LNG, maybe we ought to rethink how we report it so that we're not suggesting something that's not true. I didn't really even think about the commercial price of diesel fuel, but we have such a big customer base at the commercial end of it that we ought to try to figure out a presentation that kind of tells a story, but it gives a range, I guess.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Comments? Jack?
I guess I think we could have done a better job of, in our conversation with John today, I know that, I mean, it's kind of been the first time we've had somebody like that sit at our table. And my thought is that Elena ought to respond. I mean, there is some question as to whether not we should even entertain questions, you know, in a setting like that. You let people say what they need to say, and you know, they don't get to ask questions. I don't know that that's the proper approach or not.
Yes.
It is the proper approach?
Yes.
Okay, and why is that?
Because it's a public comment session, it's not a question and answer session.
Well, does the board have an opportunity for
in your comments, questions? You could address, respond to things. Or, you know, he could direct them to the GM or something like that, but it's not a, public comments are not a general question and answer session as an agenda item.
But is there something wrong with answering his questions? I mean, is this something we should really avoid?
It's wrong form. I raised it with Gary, but you know, if the board wants to, you know, say, okay, let's indulge this. It's not legally impermissible or something like that, you know. But it's just, and part of it is because, what is this, an agenda item? You know, what is this? I mean, we're, you know, sitting here talking about things that aren't really on the agenda. I mean, that's part of the concern, but. You know, it didn't get far enough afield or whatever that I felt compelled to interject.
And so I don't know quite, you know, where to go with that for sure. But I do believe that it ought to be Elena that answers the question.
Well, I can talk about it now or talk about it later.
I mean, you could still be the moderator, but if I turn to Elena and say, would you please address the speaker's comment, something like that. I certainly don't think we ought to be going around the table and the board, you know, individually weigh in with responses.
Well, let me just say for the record, this item is a call of the chair. So if I see a line out the door of 50 people, it's 3 minutes. If I see somebody that took time out of their day to come and sit with us and complain, he's the only one, we should sit here for a week and listen to him.
Yeah, I have no objection to the amount of time. That is not what I'm talking about at all.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying that I spent 12 years, thousands of people just like him come to talk. And it always rankled me, and it still rankles me, where they come, they take time out of their day, and they sit there for 3 minutes. And then you say thank you, and they leave. It's rude, and it's rude. And the way I meter it, and the next person may be completely different, but I meter it by looking and seeing who's waiting. And he had a legitimate complaint, and he had, as usual, bad information. But that doesn't mean that we can't sit and listen to him. And Zane brought it up, and I said, hey, that's my call.
And I agree with that, that you ought to be the moderator. I'm just not so sure that you ought to be the person that answers the question.
Well, that may be, and that's the first time we've had somebody.
Yeah, that's why I know. That's why I'm talking about it now.
I had
so
no
that
idea.
We know kind of a little better how to respond in the future.
Plus, I didn't have any answers.
Right.
We had some.
Anyway.
It's a good comment, though, and I.
That's all. Thank you.
If we want to
crank everybody down to 5 minutes. We can do that, but I don't want to make enemies. 3 minutes. Anyway, what else, Jack?
That's it.
That's it.
That's all. Thank you.
I guess I would weigh in on that because we announced 3 minutes, and so you didn't crank him to 5. You could have increased him to 5, not 25. I didn't speak to him because I didn't feel comfortable at all with the exchange the way it was going on. That it invites not only bad information, but then bad information from us or conflicting information. And so I wouldn't have an exchange. If you could read the room and let him go as long as you want, but I would avoid the back and forth, and then this board member weighs in that, saying that this is your time for input. Elena will get back to you or call you is how I would recommend doing it, but it's call it chair.
Well, I see it as a time to learn, and we all learn. Anyway, Bob, what else?
That's all I got.
Steve?
Two things. I'm going to be remote on the September meeting, so I'll be calling. And then I have a question from his talk. He's made a statement that once he converted from fuel oil, he is banned from going back to fuel oil. Is that true? It just seems weird to me.
I don't know of anything that he would have signed that says he can go back to oil. There is a deed restriction when they switch from solid fuels, but I don't know of one where he couldn't go back to oil.
You might want
to
find out.
Well, we don't know, though. He might have gone from solid fuel.
Yeah, that's true. He could have had a boiler in his yard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was talking oil.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then my mind went, well, is that number two diesel? Is that number one? Is it ultra low sulfur diesel?
Yeah.
And I've never heard that diesel. But it's just a question. That's all I have.
So I should have left more time to ask those questions.
Yeah, we should have had much
Thank
more
you
public
very
discussion.
Much.
and do you want this confidential paperwork back?
Thank you, Steve. All right, what else?
Nothing.
You're
going to
be hunting on the 3rd?
Yeah, I'll be trying to zoom in.
Yeah, good. Okay. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I go back to, I remember those same committee meetings that Gary was in. You know, when you have a line out the door, 50 people, you got to shut it down. But, you know, one or two people, especially private, that, you know, with a lobbyist, it's, you know, I don't have a lot of concern for you, but for a private person, they take the time out of their day, they should be given that leeway. But I also agree with Bob that answering the questions and stuff, especially since we also kind of have a policy here that if a reporter contacts us, individual board members, we send them to the chair or the GM, and I'm just a little worried when we start answering individual questions, you know, we might be getting off script. So, you know, we're violating our own rules that we have set up. So that's the concern there. I think we should listen to the folks, but I think we should direct all answers by the chair or the GM. So, just my ideas, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. What else?
Yeah.
All
for me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. A couple of things. So we just talked about thanking you for leeway tonight. There's some changes here we're going to make on the Finance Committee. So Pete has asked to be relieved of his duties with the Finance Committee. He has a job that pays him to be away, and he just can't be away anymore, and he's asking that he not be part of the Finance Committee. So I've granted that. This is my plan, and there's two Finance Committee. Well, I'm going to appoint myself as the Finance Committee member for August 27th and September 24th. We have an election on October 1st, and we will have a new member.
Sherry Walls. Sherry Walls.
Sherry Walls.
Is she the one that...
She'll be elected on October 2nd. It'll take time to certify that election, but surely it'll be done by October 22nd, which is the next finance committee meeting, and I intend to appoint her to be the permanent member of the finance committee, and that should start on October 22nd. Then she will continue as the finance committee permanent member until the new board chairman elects a new until the new chairman is elected, and he or she then appoints the members of the finance committee. So I think that gets us over this little bump in the road.
Don't the bylaws require that the committee appoints be approved by the board? That's what I remember.
You
can't sit down anyway.
It requires it, but not until he makes the appointment. He hasn't yet.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
What?
Not officially.
He just told us his plan.
He just discussed his intentions.
If it's certified, it should be October 22nd that she would take. I'm sorry.
Does that take option of support?
I have in my head that the bylaws say that committee appointments are confirmed by the board.
That's true.
The board might establish a standing and temporary committee to advise the director. Each committee shall be chaired by a member of the board of directors and include at least one other member of the board. Committees may include non-directors. All appointments shall be made by the chair, subject to confirmation by a majority of the board directors present.
I'll move what Gary said.
So it's not on the agenda.
That's right. We'll just, we don't need to deal with this until October 22nd for our meeting of...
We should deal with it the next meeting because we've only got four members now. We get down to three. Well, I guess that might make it easier to get a... four, so actually, I don't know.
She's got to get elected first.
I don't think it's...
Yeah. Well, she is elected.
Yeah. By default, but technically not.
Yeah.
So...
They have to certify the election. And Bob's last meeting would be October 1st. And then she would then swing in, and I would make, I don't have my date here in front of me, but it's October 22nd. I'd have to make the appointment on October, just do it on October 2nd. Is that the dial will have been cast. She has been elected, and we can just make a motion that appoints her to the permanent member of the Finance Committee effective October 22nd, which would be the first meeting. And we could confirm that on October 2nd.
So being a board, we can't do anything that we don't put on the agenda. That's crazy.
Okay, let's see. Elena?
We'll go with trying to say is that in order for you to become a member of the Finance Committee, it sounds like the board has to vote you in, which we'll have to do now at the September 4th.
What if you're the king?
So all appointments shall be made by
okay,
the chair.
I get it.
So I don't see it as an issue. We've got three anyway, and certainly Gary can attend, which he has been. The only thing Gary can't do is vote, and as long as we got two people there, you know, and we hardly ever vote on anything anyway, so I don't think it's a crisis that we are not able to actually get Gary as an official member for the next meeting.
So do we need to make a motion now so that I can be official for August 27th?
No.
We can't.
No.
Can't.
Oh, good. Oh.
And that's what I said. I don't think it makes any difference, eh?
Okay. We're all set on that. I'm done with this. Okay. The next person in a row on this is our new board member. And I think that's all I got for the good of the order. Anything else? All right. Thanks, everybody. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay.